And we are Good Nurse, Bad Nurse.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is a podcast where we're going to talk to you about some medical stories. Today, we're going to be talking to you about a NICU nurse who came up with a really cool invention.
And then we're going to talk about a crazy serial killer nurse.
Oh, man. And then we have a story, a feel-good story about a nurse who jumped into action. Well, I guess I don't know how feel good it is, but it's about a nurse who's willing to jump in when it's needed. So those are the things we're going to be talking to you about today. So I guess we should get started.
Yeah. So the first story I've got for you, Tina, you're going to really like this. Okay. Tina loves like good, uplifting nursing stories.
Uh-huh.
So I found this story from the University of Virginia School of Nursing about a nursing student there named Tricia Cady. Mm. Now, she was a nursing student, but she had already been a nurse for 22 years in the NICU. So, you know, she has put in her time.
Wow. Yeah.
She has been a nurse for a long time. But they actually assigned them a project in nursing school. And you know how they assign those projects in nursing school. And everybody's like, oh my gosh,
yes.
Could you not? You know, they're terrible, aren't they?
Oh,
they are always the worst.
Tear your eyes out. They're so bad.
It's like, I have all these hours of clinicals and then you're going to make me do this. Come on.
You feel like such a waste of time.
Yes.
And you just,
you're exhausted.
Yes.
Like anybody who's a nursing student out there right now, I'm sure, like, yes, girl,
you feel it. You guys are going, girl, yes.
So, but anyway,
so this was like an RN to BSN program?
Yes. Okay. Apparently she was already an RN, which it's interesting, you know, after being a nurse for 22 years to go back and get your BSN, it kind of makes you wonder why she went and did that. And, you know, now the trend is kind of they're pushing nurses to get their BSN.
They are. They really, it's like these hospitals, they want their nurses to be, you know, highly educated, highly trained. They want that extra bachelor degree. You would think that they would have the money to go along with it, but it doesn't always work that
mm-hmm.
way, I guess.
No.
But a lot of nurses kind of push back and say, why? Why do I need to do that? Why do I need to get a bachelor's degree? I already know everything. I've been doing this for 22 years. It sounds like this woman, something positive actually came out of her going back to school.
Yes. So for her project, she actually applied it to her current work situation mm-hmm. and killed it with this project.
Oh, wow.
The nursing instructor even said she was so surprised that she came up with this, and they were blown away because they had never had a student do anything close to this before. But Miss Cady, she went and she made an invention that's called the Cady Hug, CadyHug.
Okay.
And what this does, it's for little babies in the NICU, and it's so cute, guys. I'm looking at the picture of it right now. But what it does is honestly, it kind of looks like a straitjacket.
It does.
It does, but it's cute.
Love it, tart. Well, it's got a giraffe on it, so it's
it's okay.
At least
it's like soft gray.
Yeah.
It has cute little animals on it. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to cut you in restraints, but it's okay because your restraints are cute. But it is kind of like a restraint, but it keeps them from self-extubating and pulling out their IV lines and stuff like that. And I actually had no idea, like, let me just say, props to you guys that are NICU nurses, because I could never do that in a million years. What you guys do is so special. So, you know, thank you guys for everything you do. You guys are the bomb.
Well, you can just imagine they have these little tiny babies have these tiny little tubes going in their mouth, down their throat, breathing for them. It's hooked up to a ventilator, which is breathing for them. And their little hands are just flailing all over the place. And they grab even little newborns, you know, they grab at things. They grab hair. They grab a necklace. And so these little babies are doing that, I guess. And they're grabbing the little tube and pulling it out. That's kind of scary. We're not NICU nurses, so we don't recognize this stuff. But that I could definitely see where that would happen.
I would be like, what do you want me to do with this baby?
Oh,
like, they're so tiny. They don't even look real.
I would never get past. First, I don't think I'd ever stop crying.
Me too.
I could just couldn't do it.
I would be the train wreck.
I would be sitting there. The parents would be consoling me.
Yes.
It would be a nightmare. I could never do it.
And, you know, we were talking about the accidental self-extubation. So that's actually when they just pull out their endotracheal tube, which, like Tina explained, is breathing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the fourth leading cause of harm to these little babies in the United States.
Oh, so she's really trying to find a way to fix this problem.
It's practical. It works. She's actually pending IRB approval for this. So, and it says that the material is like stretchy and that it kind of mimics the mother's womb. So that's cool too. So I bet it, you know, feels comforting to them while they're wearing it.
Well, we swaddle the baby. We swaddle newborns. Yeah. So I guess it's the same thing, but it's maybe a more secure, a way you can actually secure it so they can't, you know, stretch out and pull it off. That's wonderful.
And then another thing I just have to point out is that Katie is 57 years old. Like, girl, you better work.
Like, I love this.
Yeah, that is awesome. You know, like, props to her. Yeah. You know, because a lot of people are like, oh, older nurses, like, whatever. They're, you know, they've had their moment. Well, but she is showing you that.
Most nurses 57 years old, they're thinking about retiring, honestly. I mean, just to be honest, that's what they got one foot out the door. And at the very least, maybe they have moved into management roles, you know, kind of moved up because you want to get away from the bedside. It's hard work. So I'm just so impressed with her.
Me too. That is awesome. It actually says in this article that Katie will graduate with her BSN this spring. So she's probably getting ready to actually graduate right now. So go, Katie.
I'm so proud of you, Katie. If you ever look. Awesome. That's her last name.
Yeah, Trisha. So Trisha, way to go, Trisha.
Katie. Oh, man, I am so proud of her. That's just amazing.
Yes, because and it actually says in this article by the University of Virginia School of Nursing that when babies accidentally extubate themselves, that puts them at a greater risk for needing like a trach, developing cognitive and physical delays, and even developing cerebral palsy.
Oh, my goodness.
So when you really put that into perspective, look at the good that her invention could do for these babies. It's just,
I am so proud of her. It's called the Katie Hug.
Yeah, so you guys be sure and look that up and wait for that. I'm waiting for it to hit the market personally. I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for this and see where it goes.
I'm so inspired. I just wonder, you know, maybe this sort of thing getting out, you know, maybe would inspire other people to look around and say, hey, what is something that I could possibly improve about patient care and may actually make a difference? You know, this is going to make a difference in the lives of so many people. I think it's wonderful.
And it's hilarious because we're always saying at work, why doesn't somebody invent that? Yeah. Well, you know what, guys out there listening, be the change and look into that like she did. I mean, I'm sure it was a process, but
she just stepped up and did it.
Yes. So kudos to you, girl. Wonderful. And then I cannot wait for you to tell me about this, okay. Tina. Tina says she's got a story for us.
Hey, do I have a story for you? This is our first podcast, and I feel like
coming in with a bang.
I feel like I'm coming in with a bang. I feel like I'm going to peak so early, I don't know where I'm going to be able to go from here. I was up so late last night, like, reading about this woman. I am so embarrassed just because she's a nurse, but let's just get started talking about this lovely lady. Her name is Kristen Gilbert. She was born Kristen Strickland in 1967. She was born in Fall River, Massachusetts, and she's the oldest. She's got a younger sister. When her younger sister came along, she was 7, and she sort of started maybe resenting the fact that she's got now somebody she's sharing her attention with, you know, with her, for the parents. So she starts, you know, basically becoming a hypochondriac, inventing sickness and illness and kind of faking stuff and lying. She became pretty much a habitual liar. She even would tell people, so Fall River, where she was from, Massachusetts. I don't know if you've ever heard of Lizzie Borden.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That's everybody's heard of that. Everybody, if you love murders,
you have heard, you know about her. Lizzie. Okay, Lizzie basically axe murder killed her her parents. And allegedly, we don't want Lizzie coming back from the dead and haunting us. Because let's just give her the benefit of the doubt. But Kristen, for whatever reason, as a child, decided she wanted to tell everybody that she was related to Lizzie Borden. Like, she thought that was a good thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's already, we got some warning signs here. As she was a teenager, people started noticing there just wasn't something quite right about little Kristen. Okay. Kristen was very controlling. She was manipulative. She was as I said, a habitual liar. All of her friends, ex-boyfriends, everybody said this about her. She was just crazy. She went around telling people that her mother was an alcoholic.
You know what my mama would have done? Oh, she would have tore my butt up, girl.
I hope so. I hope so, Sam. You know what? That's why you are a good person now. Because that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, there is no other account by any family, friends, or anybody that said that her mother was an alcoholic. That she, for whatever, just to get attention, like, oh, I'm the child of an alcoholic or whatever. That's what probably she decided to do. Yeah. She was extremely intelligent, did very well in school. She graduated from high school a year and a half early at 16 years old.
Wow.
This girl was so smart.
And it's crazy she's that smart. Yeah. There's no telling what she could have done with her life.
Exactly.
Obviously, she did something wrong with her life.
She went the complete opposite direction of where she was supposed to be going. She enrolls into college in 1986. Okay. She wants to become a nurse, so she enrolls into college. And because she fakes a suicide attempt, okay, she calls up her ex-boyfriend, and she says, I'm eating some glass to try to kill myself.
Oh, wow.
So the boyfriend, now where does she think, where is this going to go? What does she think is going to happen? I mean, I'm not sure. It's almost like she doesn't think two steps into the future at all. She's smart, but she doesn't stop and think about consequences. So she calls up this boyfriend who she doesn't want to break up with her, and she says, I'm going to kill myself by eating glass. And she tells him she already did it. So what does he do? He calls the police.
Yeah, calls 911. Like,
yes. So they
he's really scared to death.
Yes. He's like, oh, no. What does she think he's going to do? Run over there and be like, are you okay? Are you okay? And she's like, oh, I'm fine. And he's like, oh, well, why I'm here? Why don't we get back together? I mean, yeah. I don't know what she's thinking. Well, so the police come. She's fine. She is totally fine. She did not eat glass. There's nothing wrong with her. You can just imagine she's like laid out on her bed with her legs crisscrossed behind her and her little hands on her chin. And I'm just thinking, this woman is completely nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because of that incident, she actually had to get put into a psychiatric hospital for a while, and she wasn't able to complete her degree at that first community college. So eventually she ends up going to another community college, and she does get her nursing degree from this other community college.
Well, see, wow. That is crazy. Yeah. When you were in school, when I went into nursing school, before I even started the program, they made us have like all these physical exams,
exactly.
Like mental exams. We had to like sign papers saying that we were mentally fit for the program and to take care of patients. So they must have not done that back in the day.
I mean, not only are you, because not only clearly would she probably not have passed, but she was literally in a psychiatric hospital. How do you go into it?
Yes.
I don't know. I was just blown away.
Were they looking at her application like, oh, in a psych facility? Seems legit.
Maybe she could be a psych nurse.
You know, and it's probably one of those things. Have you guys, you know, you've heard people say, oh, I'm going to be a nurse. I'm going to nursing school. And you're just like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, that's not good for you. That's probably what all the people around her were saying.
Well, I'm just like, if you are already on the brink of like losing it, you go to nursing school and you better believe
you will lose it.
Yes, you're gone. You just write.
It's over.
Write
it's
certificate.
A wrap.
The girl is gone. So she gets, so while she's in nursing school though, she meets a guy named Glenn Gilbert. Okay. So her name is
poor Glenn.
Yeah. Poor Glenn. Lord have mercy. Poor guy. So now she's Kristen Gilbert. She marries him. Come to find out, she, like, 1 month after they get married, she chased him around with a knife. Okay.
That's your sign.
Honeymoon. I mean, what
honeymoon phase is over at this
point. So I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And this woman is, she hasn't graduated yet. So,
is that the pizza?
I think the pizza man is here. You guys, we're going to have to pause you for just a second, and we'll be right back after these messages. Okay, we're back.
Pizza was delicious, in case you were wondering.
Awesome. Yes, it was so good. We're full, and now we
shout out to Papa John's.
Yes.
This is not sponsored.
And no, not at all. And so, to pick up where we left off, we were talking about how she had just gotten married, And she kind of already let the cat out of the bag and showed him her crazy side within just a month of being married and chased him around with a knife.
If you want to show your husband that you're crazy, ladies, that's the way to do it.
Yes. And how in the world this man stuck it out, I have no idea. But then, so while she's in nursing school, she also took a job as a nurse's aide, okay, at this with the Visiting Nurses Association. So she gets a job where basically you go into somebody's home, kind of home health kind of aid kind of thing. Well,
I'm really scared of the thought of her being in people's houses.
It's horrifying. So this crazy person gets charged with, and this... This particular home is a foster care home. They have two foster care children, and at least one of them was handicapped. I don't know if both of them were, but there were two aides for some reason. So there's an aide that goes and is going to be getting one ready for bed, and then Kristen is the other aide, and she goes to get one of the children ready for bed. And she's supposed to give this child a bath and put him to bed, okay? The child is blind, deaf, and mute, and severely handicapped. Yes. And so...
I'm already, like, mad at the fact that if you tell me she did something to this child, I'm about to go off the chain.
Yeah, I know. It's so ridiculous. So she and her coworker, they leave after the parents get back home. And the parents go in to check on the kids, and she notices burns on the child that was blind.
Stop. Mm-mm.
I know. And so they take him to the doctor, and the child has burns over 60% of his body, and it was consistent with, like, you could tell the burns.
60% of his body?
And you could tell that the burns went right up to the level that bath water would have stopped.
Oh, my gosh, no.
And so she put the child in scalding hot bath water. And the thing is, they had equipped the bathtub with a special faucet that locked so that it was not allowed to go past a certain temperature. So it had to literally have been unlocked, because after it was all said and done, the people, like, notified the Visiting Nurse Association, like, look, this girl came in here and did this to this child, and that faucet had to have been unlocked because it worked fine. The lock worked. We know it was locked before.
How did she? Did she get arrested for this?
No.
Like, did she not get arrested?
I don't know. They never reported it. It just, it's hard for me to understand.
And she still had a license to do?
Well, I mean, she hadn't even graduated from nursing school yet.
My gosh.
It's just,
this is unbelievable.
I mean, what? This is in the late 80s.
Listen, if I was that mom, I would open up a can of you know what on her. Uh-huh. Like, no, we would have been 5'10".
I don't know how this was allowed to go undocumented somehow, you know, somehow for her, at the very least, to get some help.
I'd invited her back over and put her in that scalding water.
Let's just give you some water therapy here. So she, so this happened, and that's, it's known that it happened, but yet nothing was ever done about it. So then, okay, she graduates from nursing school in 1988, and then she gets a job at the VA, taking care of veterans, our wonderful men and women.
The people who are fighting for our country.
Yeah, let's just go take care of the wonderful
Kristen,
men and women.
Kristen, why you gotta pick on the veterans, girl?
I know.
And the handicapped children.
What?
Kristen.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
She's disgusting. She's absolutely disgusting. So she gets a job there. She's young. She's beautiful. She's very photogenic. She gets featured in their magazine, in the VA Medical Center magazine. She's considered highly skilled. She's very impressive in emergency situations. So she's got all this promise, you know, as this young, new nurse. She has a son in 1991, and when she came back to work, she starts working night shift. Okay. And so other staff members start noticing there's an unusually high number of deaths on the shift that she works in particularly.
So what do you do? Like, if you're a nurse working with somebody and all their patients are dying, like...
I know.
What do you do, and how do you go about reporting that?
I mean...
You know, like, how does that come up? Like, Oh my gosh, every time Sam works, I feel like her patients are dying. Like,
and it's so it's such a high number that people are noticing it. I mean, you know, whenever I'm working, I feel like, I mean, I work on a busy floor. Things happen. But, I mean, you're going to have deaths. You're a nurse. You're going to have to deal with that.
Oh, yeah, that's inevitable.
But
when it's happening all the time, it's like to the same nurse.
To the same nurse. You're just going to all of a sudden. So her coworkers start noticing this. They just kind of make a mental note of it and even start kind of joking around about it, calling her the angel of death.
Girl, she was no angel.
No, she was not.
Let's be real about that, Kristen. You were no angel, girl.
She was not. She was a dark angel.
But that's bad. If your coworkers are calling you the death angel, that shows you something.
Yeah.
Even that many people are dying on your watch.
Yeah, and they're like joking around about it, but even some doctors were like, I don't really want her taking care of my patients. That would be so embarrassing if like a doctor was like, I'm gonna request another nurse. I don't want her taking care of my patients because
so
my patients die. How in the world she didn't take a hint from that, and whatever in the world it is she's doing, stop, you know, but nope, not Kristen, because
she's
Kristen,
like, hey, working.
It's working. I love this. This is her world. It's just her new world, and she loves it, and she apparently has no ability whatsoever to stop. I mean, apparently, she just goes on and on. So, now, in 1992, okay, she claims that she personally received a bomb threat on the unit where she was working. She personally, like, answered the phone, and somebody had said that there was a bomb somewhere there on their unit, okay, where she was working. I think they called it
code black progress. Code black.
Code black. Seriously, Kristen, you're calling code blacks now? So now, at the time, they called them wards. We don't do that anymore where I work.
That just sounds so weird.
Yeah, ward. Ward C.
I work on the medical surgical ward.
Yes, and she worked on Ward C. And so the police came, of course, to investigate this. And this is the Veterans Administration, you know, the VA hospital.
Can somebody cue the cops theme song right now?
I know. I know. We need it. We need it bad. So here comes the police to investigate. They couldn't find anything. Did not find a thing about, you know, no, nothing suspicious, nothing. They leave. Well, apparently that was just not enough for little Kristen.
So she called in a fake bomb threat?
Well, she goes and she finds a, quote, suspicious box that the police who come up there with their bomb sniffing dogs and everything couldn't find. Kristen goes and finds the suspicious box.
No, of course she does.
She's amazing.
That was her box.
This girl is amazing.
She did that.
Lord, she can do, it's unlimited the things that this woman can do. She is wonderful in emergency situations. She can sniff out bombs. I mean, what else can she, what other amazing abilities does this woman have? So she takes it and she's like, hey, I found the box that you guys couldn't find. And it ended up being obviously.
And if you think something has a bomb in it, are you really going to pick it up and like carry it around?
Right.
Like,
I mean,
no.
So I don't know what she's just, it's like she just wants to create drama everywhere she goes. She can't handle the status quo. She's got to have something else going on, some kind of heightened, you know, alert, some sort of drama going on all the time, this woman. So now, meanwhile, you know, all this stuff is going on. In 1993, she has a second son. So now she's got two children, four kids. And after she comes back to work from having her second son, she meets a security guard named James Perrault. Okay. This guy would come, like if they were to have like an emergency code situation, the security guard, it's just part of their hospital policy that they would come to the bedside and assist with chest compressions.
Security. Does that happen in y'all's hospital? I ain't never seen security do no chest compressions.
They must have been seriously short on staff at the VA hospital. That's all I got to say. But so the security would come, and this particular James Perrault, he was the one that would come to her ward that she worked on. So this is probably not good for her Kristen's patients because she loves the attention. She loves that she wants James, this guy, to be able to see her in action and all her glory and all her wonderful skills of saving people's lives. Several coworkers actually testified that the two of them would play footsie and touch each other, quote, touch each other affectionately during codes.
During the code? Yeah. Playing foot. Okay, first off, who plays footsie anymore?
Anywhere.
And second off, during the code, girl, I'm so nervous. I can't. You know, we got to focus on just saving that patient.
I cannot.
I can't focus on what my hair looks like or my makeup or my man fellow in the
what
corner
are they,
over there.
I mean,
no,
I don't know
girl.
What she's thinking. I mean, you just wonder if the people noticed people were, if her coworkers were noticing people dying, are they noticing that every time Kristen has a code that her hair is looking good and that she's got her makeup on? Like, are they going, oh, Kristen's got her makeup on, somebody grab the code card?
There's a correlation here. Something ain't right, folks.
Their coworkers are pretty alert. They're watching this stuff. They're seeing this stuff now.
That is so bad.
I know, it's bad. It's crazy. Now, while all this stuff is going on, meanwhile, now she's got this little relationship going on. She's married. She's got two kids.
Now, that's what I was about to say. What happened to our Gilbert fellow? Right. Like, what happened to him?
Like, Glenn is at home.
So she's cheating on poor Glenn.
Exactly.
After she done chased him with a knife and everything else, now she's going to do him like this.
Exactly. Glenn says at some point, I don't think he said anything maybe necessarily at the time, but in retrospect, Glenn says that he noticed that his food was tasting funny.
Oh, girl! Glenn, run, Glenn, run!
So he's probably putting two and two together and thinking, see, she's chased me with a knife when first got married. Food's tasting funny. Coming home late from work, smelling like, you know, police aftershave and who knows. So he's probably
tried the new brand of aftershave. Uh-huh. Police aftershave. Smells like a fearless cop.
Smells like fear. Smells like fearless. Yes. Maybe that's what it's called. So, in 1995, deaths are continuing to happen on her watch. And one man in particular dies from cardiac arrest.
So, hold up. So, we've let this go on for like 2 years where all of her patients are dying like this and no one has done anything?
I mean, if you think about it, she started working there in 1989, and this is 1995 now when deaths are occurring. I mean, they noticed almost right away when she first got the job. In 1991 is when she came back, mm-hmm. when she started working nights is when they said they started noticing. I mean, who knows what was going on during the day when she was working day shift?
Gosh, that's insane to me that she's still working like 4 or 5 years later.
Right.
And no one's said or done anything.
It's 1995. She's worked there since 1989. And they're making all these jokes. And so all these deaths are happening. And then one patient in particular dies from cardiac arrest. His name is Stanley Jadakowski.
Jagodowski.
He was 66 years old, a veteran of the Korean War.
Kristen, why would the veterans? Oh, my gosh.
Killing me. Absolutely killing me. And so there were patients close to him who says that they heard him yelling, "Ow, ow, you're killing me," before he died. And she was actually seen going into his room with a syringe. Before all of this happened. So, I mean,
please tell me somebody reported this.
Well, apparently not, because this Stanley guy was kind of known for complaining. Like, you'd go in there.
Oh, so she knew to pick him because she knew. Oh, this girl's manipulative.
Yes, she's very manipulative.
She's smart.
He's one of those patients that what we call a frequent flyer, who's comes into the hospital a lot. He kind of got to where he would aggravate the nurses because he was asking for stuff constantly. If they tried to do anything, he would be mad. He wasn't compliant with his diet. Like, he wanted bacon and eggs for breakfast, and he had to have the heart healthy. That sort of thing. You know, just kind of what
patient. I'll show you asking for bacon.
I know. I mean, what is she's just like, if she's going to pick somebody, I guess, she's going to pick the person who complains about everything. So if he complains nobody's going to pay any attention to it. And that's basically what happened, because he yelled, and he probably has yelled that before. You go in there to turn him or go in there to give him a bath or anything.
Yeah,
you know?
He's probably said the exact same thing, because I know anybody out there listening in the medical field, you've had that patient, you know who we're talking about, that's like, you know, you touch their arm and they're like, oh, you're killing me, stop.
Yeah, I could totally.
That's probably this situation.
Yeah, so that's how these coworkers didn't think much of it at the time. You know, it's not until, I'm sure, a year or so later in retrospect that they start putting all of these different stories together and pulling all of the different ones from the different coworkers and patients and family members.
And that, plus, you never want to think that your coworker is doing that. Right. I mean, you know, we always have coworkers we don't like, but you know, you would never think that they are actually causing harm on purpose.
No.
You know, you never would think that about anybody.
And no, and they said that in some other interviews, certain coworkers said that she was kind of like the planner. She was the one that would like have like out of work social type get-togethers and things like that. And so she was a likable person, which a lot of the psychopaths are. You know, sometimes psychopaths are so they can relate, or they fool you into thinking they're a really good person. You know, because they come across as somebody that
like those cult leaders.
Yeah, like. It's like, oh, what a great person. She's so nice. She's so sweet.
She could never do this.
Right. No, you would never suspect. So then in November of 1995, she tries to kill Glenn, her husband, by injecting him with potassium.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's sort of like one of these situations where he doesn't know exactly what it was, but he suspects it was potassium or something. She had something in a needle. And she goes and she injects him with something and actually pins him up against the wall with her, like with her hip, because he tried to fight her off. And he said, and he never reported it. Later on, he passed out. When he kind of came to, she told him that, that she was basically had to fight him because he got confused and he passed out because of the needle. Like she somehow is able to convince him that what just happened didn't even happen. It's just unbelievable that the people around her she was so good at manipulating everybody and basically convincing them of what they're seeing is not what they're seeing.
Like, listen, guys, if this ever happens to you at home, this is how you know when it's time to pack your bags and go. Yeah. Maybe not even take the time to pack your bags. Just get out of the house.
And then
go. Like, this. Yeah. Glenn is too understanding. He's too nice.
He has put up with way too much for her. In December of 1995, a 35-year-old man named Henry Houdon is in the hospital with the flu. Now, he's 35 years old, and apparently from records and from different, when I was just kind of reading different interviews, the man is schizophrenic. He's got some issues, but she was charged with taking care of him, and he was doing better, and he was at a point that I think he was going to be getting transferred off the unit or something. Like, he was doing better, and he ends up going into 4 cardiac arrests while in the hospital, and he died.
And she was his nurse, let me guess.
She was his nurse. He was 35 years old.
That's too young.
Yes. And then, okay, so now by this time, the other nurses are watching her closely. Okay, they've taken this long. We're at the end of 1995.
It took 5 years, but now we know something's going on.
Something must be off, Kristen. So the other nurses are kind of like, hey, let's keep an eye on the epinephrine count, because they're noticing that these little vials of epinephrine are being left in like this little bucket place where they just throw the empty vials. And there's like, there'll, you know, a code will happen. And then they notice that in this bucket, there's 3 vials of epinephrine.
What?
Yeah. So it's like, when was that used? You know, it shouldn't be there, and they're noticing this, and it's kind of gotten their spidey senses going. So they start paying attention to how much epinephrine is there and kind of just watching these things, and especially when she's there. And in January of 1996, this man, Thomas Callahan, he was 60. He screams that he feels like he's going to die. Okay. He screams so loud. He feels like he's going to die. His heart rate goes to like 240. And they're able to stabilize him, but they find epinephrine vials once again.
What?
And they're like, okay. Then,
so how do you even get started, like, thinking that you're going to kill people with epinephrine? Yeah, like, we use epinephrine in, you know, when a patient goes into cardiac arrest, we'll use epinephrine to help bring them back.
Right.
So it's odd to me that a nurse, you know, would think, oh, I'm going to use epinephrine to kill somebody. Because epinephrine to me is like a life-saving drug. This is what I'm going to use to help save your life. So that's so weird to me that she would think about using it to kill.
And that's how she does it. And it's a lot of medicines are like that. If you think about it, insulin can be used to kill someone. Potassium can be used to kill someone. These are medicines that are used to save people's lives. They're life-saving medications, but if administered incorrectly at high amounts, you definitely could kill someone. And she knew it. She definitely knew it. So then Kenneth Cutting, this man who was blind, he had multiple sclerosis. He dies after Kristen just asks, goes up. Can you imagine this, Sam? Somebody comes up to you at work and goes, so if one of my patients dies, would I be able to go home early?
Yeah, that would be very suspicious.
I mean, so, just that question alone.
Yeah, I'm a team leader, which is like, a fancy name for a charge nurse on our unit. And if someone came up to me and said that, I would immediately be suspicious. Like, what are you talking about? If one of your patients dies, can you go home early? That's a red flag.
Why would you even ask that?
That is crazy.
I don't know how.
I'd be like, oh, you can go home now.
Yeah, you just go on home. Don't even worry about it if somebody dies.
Bye.
What ends up happening is that Mr. Cutting, like I said, blind with multiple sclerosis, he died after she had just asked somebody if she would be able to leave if one of her patients were to die.
And that's bold to ask that. So that shows you she's like, she's getting bold. She's getting like, crazier.
She thinks she's invincible. I think she just thinks, I don't know if she thinks everybody else around her is just really stupid. If, obviously, like I said earlier, she doesn't have the ability to think into the future. There's something missing in her brain. You know, have you ever heard that brains are not completely developed until they're like 25 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why young kids make really impulsive, stupid decisions and, you know, get on motorcycles without a helmet and do stupid things. Jump off a cliff head first, because they don't have the ability to go, wait, if I do that, this could happen, and so I better not. Because their brains haven't finished forming yet. It makes me just wonder if Kristen did have something wrong with her dadgum brain, because she
obviously
just,
something was wrong with her brain.
She's so intelligent, but she does this stupid stuff. Even for somebody who is bad, she was just making some really bad decisions here. So then we have a guy by the name of Angelo Vella. She goes into to Angelo and she tells him she's flushing his line. While she's flushing, she's like, oh, I'm just going to flush your line with some normal saline. Which
that is something, you know, that we would do once a shift. You're supposed to flush their IV to test the patency of the line. Is it still working? Right. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You don't want the IV to just sit there.
But you wouldn't go in there to just do that. You know, like, we all multitask. We know how to be bomb nurses and get stuff done. You never go in just to do one thing.
So apparently while she's flushing his line, he screamed that it burned. And his heart rate shoots up to over 300, and he goes into cardiac arrest.
Now, she done gave him some more epi, girl.
What in the world? So they're able to stabilize Angelo. Another issue, an AIDS patient passes out after Kristen flushes his line. So this happens. All of these little incidents, these are all little incidences that are being told from the point of view of the coworkers once this investigation gets rolling, okay? So it's like all of this stuff is happening, you know, independent of each other. And you know how it is at the hospital. You don't work with the same people every single day. You have nurses work 2-3 days a week. And so you may not see the same people all the time. So it may not be the same person seeing these things. So you've got all these different perspectives, and at one point when the investigators started looking and interviewing people, they start seeing this big picture mm-hmm. of what's really going on.
Can you imagine how that conversation goes with the nurses? Like, wait a minute. One of our patients died when you were working with her yesterday. Wait, I worked with her today before right. somebody died too. Why oh. working with her today and somebody oh just died?
I mean, it's just a little bit too much of a coincidence. And so nurses finally go forward to complain because all of these things are happening. And 300, up to this point, 350 people have died while she was working there. That doesn't necessarily mean she was responsible or she was even their nurse. But just 350 people died. I mean, if you think about it, she could go into somebody's room and do whatever, you know, even if it wasn't her patient. So, that's probably pretty significant. There was a man by the name of Edward Squira, and he was in the hospital being treated for alcohol withdrawal. You know how serious that is. Mm-hmm. It can be very serious. He was stable before Kristen ever started her shift. Everything was fine. He had gotten through the most difficult part. And no reason for him there to be any problems the beginning of her shift, and then went into cardiac arrest right after her shift starts.
Of course.
Yeah. So he ended up dying 3 days later from complications from all of that, and then epinephrine vials were missing from the medicine cabinet that had been accounted for before her shift had started. So they were counting the epinephrine mm-hmm. at this point, which scares me to death because, like, I mean, I know they were trying to build a case and everything, but they still are leaving. They suspect this woman of...
Yeah, how is she able to keep working?
How is it that they suspect she's doing this, but they allow her to continue to take care of patients? I know, like I said, they're trying to build a case.
But it just seems and they like want evidence. This could have been prevented. Yeah. You know, some of this could have been prevented.
I know. And so they see that some of these epinephrine vials are missing. They literally count, okay, we have 5. Kristen starts working. Patient dies, we have 2. It was like one of those situations. And it was like an hour later. I mean, if that's not red-handed, I mean, I don't know what is. So, in July of 1996, she admits to her boyfriend, Parole, that she has been intentionally causing people to go into cardiac arrest because she likes having him see her in action during codes.
Oh my gosh, that is legit crazy.
Oh my
That is goodness. So crazy.
I mean, and you know that this guy is sitting there thinking, oh my gosh.
What have I got myself into?
Yes.
And plus, it's so weird to me because I don't think anybody goes into nursing and is like, how many of my patients can I kill? You know, the reason why most people say that they're going into nursing is so they can help people right. and help people get better and stuff. And it's like, how in the world do you start killing your patients? Like, for most nurses, that's like the worst thing that could happen during your shift is yeah. for your patient to code or to die. Like, everybody wants to prevent that. No one wants that to happen.
Nobody wants that because, you know, it's interesting to me because Kristen, she's so crazy. She literally wants the spotlight shined on her during this time. And for me, and I think for most nurses that I work with, nobody wants that. I know when I'm working, if I hear code blue, my heart just sinks and I'm just like, oh, if it's my patient or anybody else's patient, that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm just thinking what's about to happen, you know, and everybody, it's just like you run to help. You're just running to help. But if it's your patient, it's even worse because the spotlight is on you and you are expected to know everything about that patient. Mm-hmm. They want to know what's been going on all day. What do her labs look like? What is she here for? What's her history? What all the background information? And you got to spit it all out at the doctor right then because they have to decide what to do.
And this is in between, you know, somebody's doing compressions. We're getting a backboard yes. under the patient. We're slapping the pads on. We're trying to give meds. It's,
right.
You know, it's just a cluster.
And I understand that she must be good at this situation, but so what? I mean, everybody that I work with, everybody's good at it. You do your job. But who in the world wants the stress? And not only that, you have other patients that you need to take mm-hmm. care of. So I'm usually in the middle of taking care of this patient. I'm also aware of the fact that, okay, it's been like 30 minutes and sometimes 45 minutes, sometimes an hour, depending on how long, what's going on. And I'm thinking, I really need to get down the hall and check on this other patient. So all this stuff goes on and it just throws the whole floor.
And here's a crazy thought for you. Like, how is she deciding which patient she was going to kill. What was that thought process like? Like, I have five patients. Which one should I kill today? Like, how does that even cross your mind?
I wonder if maybe she didn't, you know, if it was somebody who already had an underlying illness that nobody would be suspicious, or if they're older, over a certain age, then no autopsy would be performed. Like the guy that was 35, I'm really surprised, because at that age, now I know this was in the early 90s, but I kind of have a hard time believing that they wouldn't have done an autopsy on a 35-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, and maybe people who didn't have family, you know, there at the bedside to watch. I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's really, it's sad. And she was just so bold. She was just...
I think you're crazy.
I know. She was so crazy. Okay, so now, the craziness, believe it or not, is just getting started with Kristen. I mean, she has not even, her time to shine has not even come. She had done all this stuff in the dark, and now she has completely gone off the deep end. She was skirting right up next to the deep end, and now the girl has
If this
blown.
Was skirting, I don't know what the heck the deep end is, because to me, she went off the deep end a long time ago.
Exactly. So she goes, so now her husband is like, her husband is kind of figuring this stuff out too, and he's like, hey, I've got some stuff. I've got a place in my house where Kristen kind of left some of her stuff here. You know, you're welcome to come and get, you know, go through this stuff and just see if there's anything, if you find any evidence of anything. They find a handbook of how to poison people in her stuff, in her husband's
house.
There
you go.
Okay, so.
Exhibit A.
I know. It's just like, okay. And then investigators, want to interview, federal prosecutors want to interview James Perrault. Of course, now he's the ex-boyfriend, because he's since decided, no thank you, I think I'm going to pass.
And he's like, I'm going to swipe left.
Yeah, I'm going to swipe left on this one. And so he is going to go and to an interview, and he tells Kristen this. Now, they had actually, and I kind of, just a little bit of background there. She did leave her husband and moved in with this guy here in the past year. So he moves out, but he does tell her. He says, "Hey, I'm going to go on this interview with this federal prosecutors. They're making me." And she begs him not to. And he's just like, "I have to. I don't have a choice."
Yeah, so, that probably wasn't the smartest idea, telling her that.
Yeah, and so she goes and pulls up behind him in his driveway and tries to block his car so that he can't go to the interview. Number one, what do you think that's? I'm not sure where she was going with that. I'm just going to sit here forever, and you'll never be able to leave.
Oh, my gosh. Too bad Uber wasn't invented back then.
I'm just going to call a cab. What are you doing? I can walk around your car. She's so crazy. And so he goes on to the interview. Okay, so while he's in there, in the interview, somebody, now they weren't quite sure who, somebody threw some eggs at his vehicle, painted the windshield, scratched it up with keys.
I think we know who did this. I have a suspect.
Do you think? And then Perrault says that, and this happened not just at this one time when he was in this interview, but several times after that, he would come out and he'd be like, "Dadgummit, Kristen's at it again."
Yeah.
I can imagine. You get his car fixed, come back, eggs again. Well, at one time he says that a car was spotted nearby that was similar to Gilbert's, which is so funny. Like, he's like, "Dadgum, Kristen, you're not even going to drive a different car."
Really? Note to self, get a restraining order.
And so then Perrault starts receiving phone calls from someone who would breathe heavily or just...
Oh, my God!
She's like... or just hang up when he...
What was that movie where they did that? That is too much. That's probably where she got it from. It's probably whatever movie that was. Was it Scream? Or
yes!
I don't remember, but... Well, she probably saw it on the movie and was like, ooh, life tips.
Yes. She's going to call and breathe heavily into the phone and then hang up on him. Okay, she does this repeatedly, and 7 of the calls are traced back to her phone number. I mean, this girl, for as smart as she is, she doesn't even realize in 1996 that you can trace a freaking call. I don't know what her deal is. Okay.
Use a payphone.
Well, yeah. So now, according to investigators now, at this time, okay, so now you got to remember, Parole is working, or Parolt, however you say his name, he's working still as the security guard, okay? Someone, and I mean, and again, you don't know who this is, but someone is calling in to the hospital where he is, when he's on duty, where he would answer the phone and start making bomb threats to the hospital.
Hmm. Okay. Who could that be?
I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying. And what's funny is they find out, somehow the investigators find out that Kristen had gone into a Toys R Us and purchased a Talk Girl Jr. voice changing device.
Oh my gosh, she's too much. She's at the toy store.
Yeah. She goes to the toy store.
Change your voice.
Yes.
Yes, I'm calling in a bomb threat.
Exactly. And so he answers the phone at the desk, and he hears this little, like a recording, and he says it's really staticky and mechanical, and that somehow the person made a reference to the Persian Gulf veterans, so she's trying to, or whoever, I don't want to, like, you know, name any names, but somebody's trying to make them think that it's somebody who's against the Persian Gulf, okay? So that's why they're calling in the bomb threat. And over like 90 minutes, the security desk received more than 10 messages warning them and trying to get them to evacuate. She says that he got several anonymous calls, and this would happen like not only one, like at one shift, but it would happen at different shifts. Every time he would be working, he would be getting these phone calls.
This is too much. Kristen needs a hobby. Like, why is this making me think of like the Unabomber?
I know.
Like, back in the day, I could like see her with these sunglasses and a hoodie.
Like, what is she doing? And so she would say, whoever it is in the recorded voice would say, "Officer Perrault, I've been watching you, boy." At one point, the person said, "There are 3 explosive devices in building one. You have 2 hours." And then another time they said, "This is my last call. In 25 minutes, I'll see you in hell." So this, yeah, these were the things. These were just a few.
That is creepy.
Exactly.
That is so creepy.
And what's really funny is that for some of the phone calls, like, the person tried to change their voice. So there's another trip to Toys R Us that Kristen where she bought a Talk Boy Junior.
Oh my gosh, stop it.
Not kidding, bought a Talk Boy Jr. and batteries at Toys R Us. And then Perrault says that after she bought the Talk Boy Jr., the voice kind of changed a little bit. And then,
no kidding.
And that this time it had like a southern drawl.
Yeah, I'm calling in about a bomb threat.
And this is not the person that called earlier. That's a different person.
So, therefore, you got 2 bombs for the price of one.
I don't know what is she thinking? It's like why change her voice, add a southern accent, as if there's like all these multiple people calling in bomb threats. Like, there's not like
30
person.
Bombs in the same place.
All these different people all over the place calling in with the Talk Boy Jr., the Talk Girl Jr. It's just so stupid. So investigators set up surveillance at several payphones in the area around her apartment, okay? So if they know that Perrault is working his shift, then they're like, oh, we're going to watch around, like, the payphones and stuff around her apartment.
Like, could she be any more obvious?
Yeah. So Perrault received at least 4 calls that night, including one moments after a state trooper observed Gilbert entering a phone booth outside an ice cream stand. I'm just like, girl, why didn't you just go eat the ice cream? I mean, really, what are you doing? You've got ice cream right there, and you're going to go make a
priorities, Kristen, priorities.
What is your problem, girl? The ice cream would have made everything better.
Yes, it would have.
So anyway, a government expert later testified that tested the Talk Boy device, if I can talk, and they were able to apparently like remove the device alterations. So that, and the distortion. So, and Gilbert's friend and her ex-husband both identified the voice as the undistorted recording as hers.
I'm not surprised.
Like, they took all the distortion away and were like, oh, it's Kristen.
Once you take away the southern accent and everything.
I mean, it's Kristen that's got a little southern accent, but it's Kristen.
That's her. She did that.
Kristen, why? Oh, my Lord, Kristen. So then, of course, now at this point, if you stop and think about it, they don't have anything on her really for murder or for attempted murder or anything because they don't really have any evidence.
They just know she's crazy. Yes,
but now they've got her on bomb threats in a federal building. So now, girl has really made some she's made a serious misstep here because she's called in a bomb threat to a federal building. So prosecutors think that she made the calls for two reasons, that she wanted to get back at parole for dumping her and to try to get, you know, somehow obstruct the investigation of the deaths and the attempted deaths and everything that was going on there is the reason they think she was doing that. And she was actually convicted in 1998 of making the bomb threats, and she was sentenced to 15 months in prison.
I don't know. Seems legit to me. You want to derail an investigation, didn't you? Just call in a bomb threat. It works every time.
I know. She's absolutely exhausting me. I mean, this woman worked so hard. I feel like my job as a bedside nurse is so difficult. I leave there sometimes. My feet ache and my back hurts. And like I'm just like I didn't get to sit down for maybe more than 20, 30 minutes in a 12-hour shift. And I still think, this woman is exhausting me. I feel like she, all of this stuff that she put herself and all these other people through.
If she would have channeled all of that time and energy into patient care, she could have been Girl Daisy Award, Nurse Excellence Award, everything.
Oh,
but
man, she, what a waste. So, the investigation of the deaths, of course, continued while she's, I think she was under house arrest, actually, with her parents. And in 2001, she was convicted of killing Henry Houdon, who was 35, Kenneth Cutting, who was 41, Edward Squira, who was 69, and Stanley Jagodowski, who was 66. And then she was convicted of the attempted murder of Angelo Vella and Thomas Callahan. So those were the people that she actually killed or tried to kill that she was convicted of. But VA hospital staff members speculated that she may have been responsible for 80 or more deaths and more than 300 medical emergencies.
Wow. That's insane.
Is that not crazy?
That is, like, scary, too. Like, how are you supposed to feel comfortable being a patient in a hospital, like, reading that? You know? It's like, ooh.
And this is one person.
That's so scary.
Yeah. I mean, this one person that was responsible for all this chaos and mayhem and basically doing the exact opposite of what she's supposed to be doing as a nurse and what most nurses do every day, taking care of people. So that was my story.
So now we definitely need a good story to like,
and we want to
get over Kristen's craziness, crazy Kristen.
And that's kind of the point. Each week we're going to be doing this where we kind of want to start out with like a little something in the news, and then we do kind of a bad nurse kind of a story, and then we're going to try to end it on a good note with a good nurse story. So we're going to do this every week.
So the good nurse story this week, I'm sure everybody has heard of this by now. Peggy Phillips, the lady that actually did CPR to the passenger on the Southwest Airlines plane. So I'm sure everybody's heard of that in the news, but I just think it's so awesome what she did. So basically, apparently, one of the jet engines on the plane blew, and somehow the window shattered, and she, I guess, was kind of sucked into the window, maybe pulled out of the window a little bit.
Half of her body.
Crazy. And apparently they were asking for volunteers, like, who knows CPR? Are there any doctors or nurses present?
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, this is the point where, like, I've always told my husband, if we're ever out in public and somebody asks that, shut the heck up.
Do not say that I'm a nurse.
Do not be volunteering.
You don't know me.
I am not going, like, I'm not going to be that first person. I will be the person who goes, oh, crap. Yes, ma'am, I'm a nurse. I'm not going to be I'm not a heroic, I'm not that person. I'm just not. I want to help, and I will do everything to help somebody if I absolutely need to. But I want to make sure there's not somebody else around me who knows more than I do before I go jumping in my two cents.
Y'all got any more of the nurses on here? Any doctors? Anybody that's more qualified than me?
Sure. Okay, fine.
But she did. She spoke up. And she went and she did CPR with an EMT for like over 20 minutes, which, wow. You know, I'm sure some of you probably seen that tweet floating around. Like, I wish that I could do 2 minutes of CPR without feeling like I need to be coded myself. Like, that's how probably anybody feels about doing CPR. It's very strenuous. It's hard. Yeah. Like, I do feel like I get all hot and sweaty and nasty. And
it's physically
like
taxing.
I'm going to die. It's hard. So, you know, 20 minutes may not sound like a long time, but that is a long time to do chest compressions.
Sure is.
So they worked together and did that, and it's kind of weird because some articles like mention an EMT, some don't. Some articles mention like a ranch hand helping, and then like a firefighter. So who really helped? I'm not sure of, and that's kind of sad too. Like, I'm really glad that we're giving Peggy her credit, and that we're, you know, putting nurses in that positive spotlight. But, you know, can we please distinguish who her help was and mention their names? Like, if they were an EMT, well, what was their name? And I've seen a couple of articles that mention a ranch hand's name and a firefighter's name, but, you know, it's just kind of odd to me. You know, let's acknowledge everybody who helped here and not just that one person.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, in the medical field, sometimes there's sort of a hierarchy that's perceived, not just by people in the medical field. I think there's a hierarchy that's perceived by people in the medical field, but also people who are not in the medical field. You know, people just kind of look at the medical professionals and say, well, the doctor is obviously at the top and the nurses are somewhere below, and respiratory therapists and EMTs and, you know, CNAs and whoever, occupational therapy, physical therapy. And there's like this when in reality, that's not the way.
No, that's not true.
It is.
We have one common goal, and we're all here to work together for the patient. Like, we want positive patient outcomes. We want our patients to do well, and that's our common goal. And we all just need to work together to help that. So I don't know, you know, what played into this. I'm just speculating, you know, starting a little drama. But that's just struck me as odd, like reading the several articles about her.
Because it makes me wonder if there had been a doctor there that was helping, would they have then said, doctor performs chest compressions or doctor performs CPR, and made a bigger deal about the doctor, you know, and the nurse kind of in the background.
They'd be like, what? There was a nurse here?
Yeah.
Nurse who? Who was that? But in all seriousness, regardless, they did 20 minutes of CPR, which is awesome, but unfortunately, the person did die, and she left behind two children, so that, you know, that's so sad and unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I just want to focus on the positive of what, you know, that nurse did for someone that she didn't even know. And she just simply responded that it was her job, that that's what she had always been trained to do. And she was actually a retired nurse. So, you know, there's no telling how long she had been out of nursing, how long it had been since she had done CPR, had a CPR class. So kudos to you, Peggy. That's amazing that you stepped up and did that and tried your best to promote a positive outcome there. So that's pretty much, that's a short story, but that's our good story for the week.
I love that story. I think that's great. Anytime you can give kudos to somebody who's willing to step up and help, and I wish it had a happier ending for the lady. And I mean, that's so sad for her and her family.
But we do want to promote, you know, like you said, being positive, lifting each other up. Like, the medical field is hard enough without us putting each other down. Like, we have to empower each other.
I agree.
And keep that one common goal of positive patient outcomes in mind. And we have to work together and just get the job done. No one's better than anyone else. We're all here to work together.
Yes, absolutely. And also remembering to appreciate when there is somebody out there in the field, out there just in life, at a restaurant, on a plane, wherever, and a medical emergency happens and there's somebody willing to step up and put themselves out there like that to try to help, to not hold them somehow accountable, you know, if something goes wrong, because that's kind of a scary it's a scary situation to think, you know, mm-hmm. you might jump in and try to give somebody the Heimlich maneuver and accidentally break a rib or something like that, you know.
Yeah, you never know, and it can be so scary, especially in an uncontrolled environment like that.
Oh, yeah.
I've never been put in that situation, but I'm sure it's extremely terrifying, mm-hmm. so.
All right, well, I think that wraps it up this week. Sam, it's our first podcast.
Is it over already?
It's over. I'm so excited that we got this first one under our belt. I hope you guys will come back and listen to us next week. We're going to do this. We're going to do one a week. I think we're going to try to maybe even do like a little mini episode at some point. We'll talk some more about that. And we're also going to be making a Facebook page and an Instagram page,
email.
All of that stuff has not been done yet, but we're working on it. We're going to be working on it, and hopefully we'll have that up soon, and we'll let you know what all that information is. And we appreciate you listening. And remember,
even if you're a bad girl, be a good nurse.